Good morning. It's time to read the Mason City Globe Gazette for Thursday, February 13th. I'm Debbie Cedars, and my partner is not well today, so I'm your reader for the day. Good morning, Betty, and I'm very happy to be here with you. This broadcast is made possible through a partnership between the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service and 97.9 FM KCMR Radio. Here are today's headlines on the front page of the Globe Gazette. Garner Hayfield Ventura moves middle school, starts cuts. Iowa Dem chairman to resign. The gingerbread lady debuts. And for the weather, I'm sure you're anxious to hear about this. Bitterly cold today with decreasing clouds. Outdoor activity can be dangerous. Expect 3 to 6 hours of sunshine with average relative humidity 70% and fair drying conditions. Temperatures falling to near the record of minus 20 tonight. Average relative humidity 75%. Plenty of sunshine tomorrow. So for today, decreasing clouds, frigid, wind out of the northwest at 10 to 20 miles per hour with a high of minus 5. Tonight, cold. Wind out of the west, 6 to 12 miles per hour, temperature minus 19 will be the low. Tomorrow, sunny but cold, wind out of the south-southeast at 10 to 20 miles per hour, a high of 15 and a low of 10. Saturday, mostly cloudy, not as cold, wind out of the west at 8 to 16 miles per hour, and a balmy high of 32 degrees and a low of 15. Sunday, clouds and sunny, wind out of the west-northwest at 7 to 14 miles per hour, a high of 27, a low of 22. And Monday, cloudy. In the evening, snow and breezy, wind out of the east-northeast at 10 to 20 miles per hour, a high of 30 and a low of 11. Our first story, Garner Hayfield Ventura moves middle school and starts cuts, and there's a large colored picture on the front page of the building in Ventura. The students will be moving to the elementary school in Garner, and the middle school will be used for athletic practices and events. 1 week ago, people in the Garner Hayfield Ventura community heard about the changes the school district will be making to increase spending authority for the next year. On Monday night, the Garner-Hayfield-Ventura Community School District School Board officially started the process of making the changes necessary to cut $850,000 in expenditures for the 2020-2021 budget. In its first steps toward raising its spending authority, the school board approved moving the students at the middle school in Ventura into the elementary school building in Garner. This move will make the Garner Elementary building a preschool through 8th grade facility. With all the students and staff in Garner, this move makes it easier for the district to share teachers between the buildings, allowing them to reduce staff and also reduces transportation costs. The school board approved reducing 13 certified full-time staff members. Of the 13 staff members, the district has already had 2 take an early retirement package and accepted 7 letters of resignation, according to Superintendent Tyler Williams. Those 9 positions will all be filled in with current staff members, which makes the actual reduction of teachers down to 4, he said. If no one had resigned or taken early retirement, the district would have had to cut 13 teachers at the end of the year, Williams said. Though the board approved reducing the staff by 13, the administration and superintendent choose which positions will be cut, and Williams said this will be done in the elementary, middle, and high schools. Because the 7 resignations and 2 retirees won't be on the payroll next year, this is still a significant cut in the budget. As it is, with 13 less teachers next year, Williams said they will be moving several teachers into different positions. The key is that they'll have a wonderful job and a wonderful school district, so we were happy with the way that turned out, although obviously we are incredibly sad to lose 4 of our really quality people. And that's the difficult part about all of this, he said. In the meantime, with no students in the middle school building in Ventura anymore, the district will still be maintaining it and paying for its upkeep and all utility bills, and it will now only be used for athletics, Williams said. It's a beautiful building, he said. We'll have to be patient in figuring out how we utilize that building. In a previous article on this topic, it was said that Four Oaks will likely be moving into the middle school building as well. However, this is incorrect, according to Williams. Four Oaks will be moving into the former elementary school building in Ventura that currently also houses Redeemer 4-year-old through preschool and the Garner Hayfield Ventura Alternative School. With all these big changes, the school board has already nearly reached its goal of cutting $850,000 in expenditures. Personnel cuts alone will bring the district $805,000 in cost savings, according to Williams. Additionally, not using the old middle school building in its full capacity will bring some cost savings, and there will be even more savings in transportation of shuttling kids between Garner and Ventura. In the March school board meeting, Williams said they will focus on other areas of reduction that include all other areas where it's possible to cut expenditures. Everything from your kitchen to your bus drivers, custodians, your office staff, your administration, all of the things that are now part of this, he said. Just the teachers were taken care of Monday night. Though they've just about reached their recommended $850,000 goal, Williams said they don't know what the final number of expenditure cuts will be. One of the things we're trying to do is just be as lean as we can while providing an amazing experience for kids, he said. The Gingerbread Lady debuts Neil Simon play on Mason City stage for the first time. A lesser-known, lesser-produced play by Neil Simon is taking the stage at the Mason City Community Theater for the first time, and Steve Musson couldn't be more excited to direct its debut. The Gingerbread Lady will run 2 weekends at the theater located at 215 South Delaware Avenue. Showtimes are 7 p.m. Thursday through Saturday and 2 p.m. Sunday, as well as 7 p.m. February 20th, 22nd, and 2 p.m. February 23rd. And the cost is $10 for students and $15 for adults. Musson saw the play 3 times in the early 1970s after it opened on Broadway and instantly loved its clever dialogue, comic relief, and its ability to depict serious issues like addiction, abuse, and fading youth in a touching and entertaining way. I've just loved the show ever since, and I've always wanted to do it here, he said. The dark comedy is about Evie Mira, a popular singer played by Michelle Murray, who has hit the skids. After a short stay in rehab, her best friend, age-defying Toby, her daughter Polly, and Jimmy, a gay actor, try to help her adjust to sobriety with a jolly birthday party. Enter Lou Tanner, a former lover who ends up giving her a black eye. The party is a washout. The Gingerbread Lady falls off the wagon and hits the ropes once again. This play was written 45 years ago, and the issues are just so current, Musson said. I just can't believe it. The Gingerbread Lady originally opened on Broadway in December 1970 and closed in May 1971 after 193 performances and 12 previews. The play earned Maureen Stapleton a Tony Award in 1971 for her role as Evie Mira. Musson, who is directing his first play since It's Only a Play last May, wanted to bring the production to Mason City because the entire show takes place in a third-floor New York City apartment, a scene that suits the community theater's setup. The Gingerbread Lady is anchored by a cast of 6 veteran actors. Casey Schlichty, 19, who plays Evie's daughter, Polly, is no stranger to theater, but this is only her 2nd appearance on the Mason City stage. She last appeared in It's a Wonderful Life in December. She decided to audition for this show because she loved the script, especially her 17-year-old character. I'm the only one in the entire cast that's not funny, Schlichty said. She described her character as the responsible and mature one. A lot of the lines out of context sound like I'm the mom in the relationship, Schlichty said. Troy's son's character, Jimmy Perry, an openly gay actor, is Evie's best male friend. He last appeared in the community theater's Urinetown, and he decided to audition after Musson approached him about playing Jimmy a couple years ago. It fit me better than I thought it did, he said. Sunt said he traditionally auditions for parts that are outlandish, silly, and fun. And although Jimmy is silly and fun in The Gingerbread Lady, he is also as painfully close to my own life as you can get. Because he is as real as he is, it's been a challenge trying to find his voice, but I think I found it, he said. Also cast in The Gingerbread Lady are Jacob Gray as Manolo, Lori Holtoss as Toby Landau, and Mark Murray as Lou Tanner. The show's stage manager is Carol North. Schlichty and Sunt said the camaraderie with the cast and crew has been the most enjoyable part of the show. Both actors are working with individuals they haven't in the past, which has expanded their theater families. We become very tight-knit during the show, and we stay that way, he said. Musson, Schlichty, and Sunt agreed. The Gingerbread Lady is for more mature audiences because of the complex issues portrayed, alluding to its realness, complexity, and relatability. But they encourage the public to support local talent in community theater by attending one of the performances. I think everybody knows somebody that has had to deal with or are dealing with these same problems. But she can laugh at herself, she can make fun of herself, and that's where the comedy comes in, Musson said. As I said, tickets are $15 for adults and $10 for students and can be purchased 1 hour before the performance at the box office or by calling 641-424-6424 between 1 and 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. For more information or to purchase tickets online, visit mccommunitytheater.wixsite.com/MCCT. Mason City JC's meeting to feature local, state, and national member. In a little more than a week's time, residents of both Mason City and Clear Lake will be able to chat about issues facing the area in an event that's local in focus, but will be somewhat regional and national in attendance. On Friday, February 21, the Mason City JCs, with the help of the state-level JCs chapter and the national JCs group, will hold a roundtable discussion event at the Best Western Holiday Lodge in Clear Lake to identify local challenges and community solutions to those challenges. A release for the Love the Town meeting makes clear that members of the public are free to attend the event, which is set to start at 5 p.m. and should last at about 2 hours. The local Mason City chapter holds its regular meetings the fourth Thursday of every month at 6 p.m. at Stampede's Bar and Grill in Mason City. The group's primary focus at all levels is aimed at developing future leadership through service and volunteerism, while also providing social and community opportunities. Looking back, today is Thursday, February 13th, the 44th day of 2020. There are 322 days left in the year. Today's highlight in history, on February 13, 1945, during World War II, Allied planes began bombing the German city of Dresden. The Soviets captured Budapest, Hungary, from the Germans. On this date, in 1633, Italian astronomer Galileo Galilei arrived in Rome for trial before the Inquisition, accused of defending Copernican theory that the Earth revolved around the sun instead of the other way around. Galileo was found vehemently suspect of heresy and ended up being sentenced to a form of house arrest. In 1861, Abraham Lincoln was officially declared winner of the 1860 presidential election as electors cast their ballots. In 1935, a jury in Flemington, New Jersey, found Bruno Richard Hauptmann guilty of first-degree murder in the kidnap slaying of Charles A. Lindbergh, Jr., the 20-month-old son of Charles and Anne Lindbergh. Hauptmann was later executed. In 1965, during the Vietnam War, President Lyndon B. Johnson authorized Operation Rolling Thunder, an extended bombing campaign against the North Vietnamese. Now we're going to turn to sports. Future is bright for Faber, Clear Lake girls. There's a large picture of Clear Lake senior Sarah Faber driving the ball behind a Hampton Dumont Cal defender Tuesday in Clear Lake's game. It's been a good week for the Clear Lake girls basketball team. Last Friday, senior Sarah Faber broke the school's all-time scoring record in a 31-point victory over Humboldt. And on Tuesday, the Lions clinched the North Central Conference title with a 68-45 victory over rival Hampton Dumont Cal. It was especially sweet for the Lions to take the NCC championship on senior night. After finishing second in the NCC a season ago, the Lions were happy to have the title back on a night where the home crowd said goodbye to its upperclassmen. "It feels good," head coach Bart Smith said. "It's just one thing that was on the girls' things to accomplish this year. We let last year get away from us and won it the year before. We don't want to give that thing up, and it's nice to win it here and win it in the fashion that we did." Clear Lake dominated from the offset. In the first quarter, the Lions quickly got out to a 7-0 lead. By the end of the first, they led the Bulldogs 20-5. At halftime, Clear Lake had extended the lead to 46-18. In the fourth quarter, the Lions outscored the Bulldogs 15-12 to secure the win and the conference crown. Faber finished the night with 19 points on 9 of 10 shooting. For the Lions senior star, the conference title was just the first on the list of accomplishments she hopes to check off before the season is done. "We all feel like we just need to keep on going as a team," Faber said. "We know what we can do, and it was one of the goals that we had at the beginning of the season. We have one down. We still want to get to state. That is the next goal." For Faber, moving past Megan Keefe last Friday to become Clear Lake's all-time leading scorer was an accomplishment that had been on her mind for a long time. Smith remembers during Faber's freshman year, she told him she wanted to break the record. It was on her mind from the very beginning. "I kind of cautioned her on that," Smith said. "I'd never had a player come out and say that before. I was just making sure. It's a good goal to have. But also, think about the team." She's been above and beyond since her freshman year. During her sophomore season, Faber averaged 16.7 points per game as the Lions won the conference and made it to the state tournament. Her junior year, Faber averaged 18.2 points per game. This season, she is averaging 17.3 points per game, the top scorer on the 19-2 Lions. For Smith, the thought process shifted. It wasn't a matter of if she would break the record. It became a question of when. She almost broke the single-game scoring record on a couple occasions when she was a sophomore, Smith said. Last year, she had 17 a game. She is going to get 17-20 per game. Defensively, she can just fly by people and get layups. After the game, which came against Humboldt, Faber was given the game ball as the crowd cheered her historic accomplishment. "It was awesome," Faber said. "I know I couldn't have done that without my team. They wanted it for me, too. It was great to do with all of my best friends." Smith, who has been the Lions head coach since 2011, knows that there are still several goals for Faber to accomplish this season. With the scoring record and a conference title in the books, the team's first state title is the looming prize. "I'm happy for her to get that," Smith said. "She's worked really hard for it, and it's one thing that is on her list to do. Another is a conference title. We've got that." The final one is state title. It's a good one to end on. We'll be ready to go against Garner on Saturday. The Lions will open regional tournament play at home at 5 p.m. Saturday against Garner Hayfield Ventura. Six Mason City swimmers are going to state. The Mason City boys swimming team will end its season on the state's biggest stage on Saturday at the state swim meet at the University of Iowa. After returning just one state qualifier this season, August Davison, head coach Steve Hugo is pretty happy with how things have turned out. At the district swim meet this past weekend, Mason City qualified three relay teams for the state meet: the 200 medley relay team, the 200 freestyle relay, and 400 freestyle relay will all make the trip. Those three teams are comprised of three seniors and three underclassmen. Every single swim we had throughout the meet was a season best time, so we had 100% time cuts at the district meet, Hugo said. Usually a couple of swimmers will falter, but they put it together for this meet. Davison is the team's only returning state swimmer. He will compete this year in all three relays, along with Trevor Torkelson and David Johnson. Perhaps the biggest surprise this season for Hugo has been Torkelson. He is still pretty new to the 100 fly, and now will be competing in it for a state title. "We're really excited about Trevor," Hugo said. Saturday was only the fourth time he had done the 100 fly ever. He just looked good in the butterfly before Christmas. He's looking pretty good. With so many first-timers at the state tournament, Hugo is excited for his swimmers to experience the excitement of the big stage. The six swimmers making the trip are Ryan Cordles, Davison, Torkelson, Johnson, Adam Detmer, and Sawyer Berg. "I think they're going to have a grand time," Hugo said. "The University of Iowa pool is a fine facility. It is only about 6 years old, so it's still got that brand new look to it." Hugo was proud of his team's performance at the district meet. Swimmers in 10 different events earned a spot on the Mohawks' all-time performance best list. "It's pretty impressive," Hugo said. "Most of the guys on there have been state meet qualifiers in the past. The past creeps up into the future and things get faster. You've got to be pretty quick to get on those charts." The state meet will begin at noon on Saturday. Prep Roundup. Osage Wrestling advances to state dual meet. And there's a picture of Osage's Noah O'Malley beating Trent Pisney of Crestwood by a 3-0 decision in the 152-pound weight class Tuesday at the Class 2A regional dual meet in Osage. The Osage wrestling team advanced to the state dual championships next week after defeating Forest City and Crestwood on Tuesday at the Class 2A regional. The Green Devils defeated Forest City 56-18, taking seven matches by fall, three by decision, and one by technical fall. Winning matches for Osage were Keaton Muller at 195 over Drake Freeman by fall in 1 minute 16 seconds. Barra Muller, 220 pounds, over Carson Buffington by fall in 1 minute 18 seconds. Skylar Wright, 106, over Robe Beery by a 9-6 decision. Excuse me. Nicholas Fox, 120, over Brock Moore by a 12-6 decision. Joe Sullivan, 126, over Ethan Sesker by fall in 2 minutes and 41 seconds. Avery Aben, 132, over Austin Kirschbaum by fall in 5 minutes 28 seconds. Ryan Adams, 138, over Caleb Umbaugh by fall in 2 minutes 59 seconds. Joey Potter, excuse me, please. .145 over Hayden Hoffmeyer by fall in 2 minutes 22 seconds. Noah O'Malley, 152 pounds, over Christian Gunderson by a 2-1 decision, and Zach Williams, 160 pounds, over Caden Fleener by a 22-7 technical fall in 5 minutes and 24 seconds. In their second match against Crestwood, the Green Devils won 36-28, taking 4 matches by decision and 4 by fall. Winning matches for Osage were Nicholas Fox over Carter Fusick by a 13-6 decision, Joe Sullivan over Matthew Slifka by fall in 2 minutes 37 seconds, Avery Aben over Bryce Shea by fall in 2 minutes 18 seconds, Noah O'Malley over Trent Pisney by a 3-0 decision, Zach Williams over Hunter by a 6-4 decision, Spencer Mooberry, 160 pounds, over Cameron Scheidel by fall in 25 seconds, Keaton Muller over Landon Schimmel by a 7-2 decision, and Barrett Muller over Brendan Dixon by fall in 1 minute 22 seconds. In girls basketball, Ankeny Centennial 63, Mason City 39. The Mason City girls basketball team is 10-10 after a loss at home on Tuesday. The Mohawks trailed by 10 points after the first quarter and continued to lose ground in each following quarter. Ankeny senior Meg Burns led the Jaguars offense with 22 points, hitting 6 three-pointers. Mason City will play its final game of the regular season Friday at home against Fort Dodge. Garner Hayfield Ventura 63, Eagle Grove 35. The Cardinals finished their regular season with a win at home on Tuesday, leading the Eagles by 4 points after the first quarter. The Cardinals went on a 32-11 run in the second and third quarter to widen their lead and secure their 8th win of the season, bringing their record to 8-13 for the year. Sophomore Chloe Frank led the Cardinal offense with 18 points, hitting 7 of 15 from the field, including 3 three-pointers. Senior Mackenzie Darg pulled down 12 of the Cardinals' 50 total rebounds. Garner Hayfield Ventura will play Clear Lake on Saturday in a regional game at Clear Lake. Waverly Shellrock 64, Charles City 37. The Charles City girls basketball team was handed its third straight loss Tuesday on the road in Waverly. The Gohawks kept the Comet offense at bay in the first quarter, outscoring them 22-4. Junior Abby Draper led the Gohawks' onslaught with 26 points, who was perfect from the field, shooting 11 of 11. Charles City will close out their regular season Friday on the road against Decorah. In boys basketball, Ankeny Centennial 97, Mason City 61. The Mason City boys basketball team was handed its 11th loss of the season Tuesday at home. The Mohawks were within striking distance after the first quarter, but the Jaguars' offense hit the gas in the next two quarters, outscoring Mason City 57-27 before the final frame. Senior Jeffrey Scogan led the Mohawks with 17 points, hitting 7 of 14 from the field. Sophomore Corey Miner and senior Austin Richardson each had 12 points. Mason City will play Fort Dodge at home on Friday. Waverly Shellrock 48, Charles City 44. The Charles City boys basketball team was handed its 8th loss of the season Tuesday at home. Stats were not available from this game. Charles City will play at Decorah on Friday. Garner Hayfield Ventura 72, Eagle Grove 34. The Cardinals finished their regular season Tuesday with their 11th win of the year. Garner Hayfield Ventura jumped ahead early, leading the Eagles by 10 points after the first quarter. To start the second half, the Cardinals came out swinging, outscoring the visitors 23-5 to secure a healthy lead and the win. Senior Landon Dahlbeck led the Cardinals' offense with 26 points, hitting 10 of 18 from the field, including 5 three-pointers. Garner Hayfield Ventura will play a district game Monday at home against Belmont Clemmy. Clear Lake 63, Hampton Dumont Cal 45. The Clear Lake boys basketball team improved to 18-2 after a win at home on Tuesday. The Lions hit the ground running in the first half, leading the Bulldogs 18-7 in the first quarter. Clear Lake continued to dominate the Bulldogs in the second half, widening their lead to 15 points before the final frame. Hampton Dumont Cal senior Drew Uhlenhop and junior Jordan Severs, or Severs, Each had 14 points for the Bulldogs. Clear Lake will close out their season Tuesday at Algona Hampton Dumont. Cal will play at North Butler on Thursday. And in the area calendar, what's coming up? In basketball, Newman Catholic will host Northwood Kinsett at 7 p.m. On Thursday. And in bowling, Mason City will be at Ridgewood Lanes at 10 a.m. Thursday. Friday, basketball. Mason City girls will host Fort Dodge at 6:15 p.m. Newman Catholic boys will host Lake Mills at 7:45. And Mason City boys will host Fort Dodge at 7:45. In track and field, NIAC will be at the SDU Indoor Classic, time to be announced. And in hockey, the North Iowa Bulls will host St. Louis at 7:30 p.m. This is all tomorrow night. Saturday in basketball, the NIAC women will be at Iowa Central Community College at 1 p.m. Men will be there at Iowa Central Community College at 3 p.m. And the Clear Lake girls will host Garner Hayfield Ventura at 5 p.m. In wrestling on Saturday, the Mason City boys will be at Fort Dodge for varsity districts at noon. Clear Lake will be at Algona for varsity districts at noon. And Newman Catholic will be at Denver varsity districts at noon. Also on Saturday in swimming, Mason City will be at the University of Iowa varsity state, time to be announced. In track and field, NIAC will be at SDSU Indoor Classic, time to be announced. And hockey, the Bulls will host once more St. Louis at 7:30 p.m. That's all on Saturday. Sunday, wrestling, NIAC will be at NJCAA North Central District Tournament at 10 a.m. Monday, in basketball, the Mason City boys will host Charles City at 7:45 p.m. And Tuesday, under basketball, the Mason City boys will be at Des Moines North at 7:45 p.m. And the Clear Lake boys will be at Algona at the same time, 7:45 p.m. And that wraps up our sports. Now we're turning to remembrances. Iris Jane Anderson, Norman L. Bailey, Stephen Hanna, Donald Joseph Hartnett, Clarence Gordon Hildebrand, Douglas P. Badker, Jack Martin Henriksen, Ronald Bruner, William W. Bill Elliott, and Robert John Schreckengost. Iris Jane Anderson, 93, of rural Joyce, died Sunday, February 9th, at the Oakwood Care Center in Clear Lake. Funeral services will be held at 1 p.m. Wednesday, February 12th, at the Cataldo Schott Funeral Chapel, 505 North Clark Street in Forest City, with Pastor Rod Rodha officiating. A visitation will be held 1 hour prior to services at the funeral home on Wednesday. Burial will be in Beaver Creek Cemetery, Rural Joyce. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to the Beaver Creek Cemetery Fund in care of Jerry Field, 3770 Bluebill Avenue in Joyce. Iris Jane Nelson was born August 19, 1926 in Clear Lake, the daughter of Elmer and Lucy Nickerson Nelson. She was baptized in the United Methodist Church in Clear Lake and confirmed in the Zion Lutheran Church in 1944 by Reverend Reuben Mostrom. She attended country school throughout the sixth grade and then attended Clear Lake Community Schools, graduating from high school in the class of 1943. She attended Hamilton School of Commerce in Mason City, graduating with a junior secretarial course diploma in 1945. She applied to the civil service and was accepted as secretary in the offices of the Quartermaster General in Washington, D.C. during World War II for 1 year. She returned to Mason City and was a secretary to Ida Rorum with the North Central branch of the Lutheran Welfare Society for 3 years until her marriage. Iris was a secretary at Deluxe Products and Walker Manufacturing from 1960 through 1973, resigning as secretary to manager to stay at home. However, she worked part-time at WCTA during 1990. On April 1948, she was united in marriage to Wesley C. Anderson in Joyce at the Zion Lutheran Church in Clear Lake by the Reverend L. F. Shea and Reverend Reuben Mostrom. They made their home on a farm near Joyce and were parents to 3 sons. Iris was a member of the Beaver Creek Lutheran Church for 52 years until the congregation dissolved in September of 2000. She was a member of the choir, held all office of the WELCA, was active in Mission Circle, and directed children's choir and taught Sunday school for 10 years. She served on the church council for several years and was secretary of the combined committee of the Beaver Creek Church Council and the Beaver Creek Cemetery Memorial Monument, the monument being completed in 2002. While employed in Mason City, she was a member of the Trinity Lutheran Congregation, Reverend L. Rognes as pastor. She was a member of the church choir and LDR. After Beaver Creek was moved, she became a member of Emmanuel Lutheran Congregation in Forest City. She has been a member of the Iowa Society of Mayflower Descendants since 1985, when she traced her family history to Mayflower passenger John Howland. Iris loved baking and cooking, working on her genealogy, being outdoors, working on her lawn and flowers, and helping on the farm. Arrangements are with Cataldo Schott Funeral Home in Forest City, and online condolences may be left for the family at cataldoschottfh.com. Norman L. Bailey, 79, of North Springs, passed away Friday, February 7th at the North Springs Care Center with his family at his side. The family will host a celebration of life from 2 to 4 p.m. on Saturday, February 15th at the North Springs Community Center, 16 South Summit Avenue in North Springs. An interment will take place at the Rock Falls Cemetery at a later date. If friends desire, memorials may be directed to the Old Stone Methodist Church in Rock Falls in Norman's honor. Sheckler Colonial Chapel is in charge of those arrangements. Stephen Hanna, 74, of Crystal Lake, passed away Tuesday, February 11th at Mercy One Hospice of North Iowa in Mason City. Memorial services will be held at a later date, and Ewing Funeral Chapel is in charge of those arrangements. Donald Joseph Hartnett, age 83, of Waverly and formerly of Clear Lake, died Sunday, February 9th at his home. Don was born on November 3, 1936 in Webster City, the son of Martin and Helen Hanrahan Hartnett. He was raised in Webster City, where he was baptized in 1936, confirmed in 1946, and graduated from the Webster City High School in 1954. Don then attended Drake University in Des Moines. On February 8, 1958, Don was united in marriage to Janet Joy Hoffman in Des Moines. After their union, the couple lived in Des Moines until moving to Clear Lake in 1979. During his life, Don worked as a pharmaceutical representative for Iowa Drug from 1958 to 1960, Walgreens from 1960 to 1968, and for Shearing Plow from 1968 until retiring in 1996. On April 2, 1983, Janet passed away. On October 6, 1984, Don was united in marriage to Pamela Yvonne Davis in Clear Lake. After retirement, Don and Pam owned and operated an antique store and restoration business in Clear Lake. Pam passed away on July 24, 1997. In July of 2018, Don moved to Waverly to be closer to family. Don was a member of St. Mary Catholic Church in Waverly and Knights of Columbus. Don's greatest enjoyment in life was his children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and time with other family. However, he also enjoyed good crossword puzzles and Irish whiskey. Visitation will be held on Friday, February 14th at Kaiser Corson Funeral Home in Waverly from 4 to 7 p.m. with a scripture service at 6 p.m. Mass of Christian burial will be held 10 a.m. on Saturday, February 15th at St. Mary Catholic Church in Waverly with Father David Ambrosi officiating. Private burial will take place on Saturday, February 22nd at Clear Lake Municipal Cemetery in Clear Lake. Memorials may be directed to St. Jude's Children's Hospital, St. Mary Catholic Church in Waverly, or St. Patrick Catholic Church in Clear Lake. Online condolences may be left at the KaiserCorson.com funeral home, and they are in charge of the arrangements. Clarence Gordon Hildebrand, 87, of Belmont, died Sunday, February 9th at the Rehabilitation Center of Belmont. Visitation will be at Andrew's Funeral Home in Belmont on Friday, February 14th from 5 to 7 p.m. and will continue 1 hour prior the funeral service Saturday at the church. Funeral services will be held at the United Church of Christ in Belmont on Saturday, February 15th at 10:30 a.m. Pastor David Bugard will be officiating. Burial will be in the Belmont Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, please direct memorials to Kindred Hospice or the Belmont Clemmie Scholarship Fund. Gordon was born August 20, 1932 in Belmont to Clarence and Mary Brown Hildebrand. He was raised in Belmont and graduated from Belmont High School in 1950. Gordon married Nanette Nelson in 1955 in Nanette's hometown of Mediapolis and made their home in Belmont. The couple had two children, Donna and David. Gordon worked at the local seed company, Tomco/ACCO, and managing the family farmland around Belmont. In 1979, Gordon was elected to the board of directors of First State Bank in Belmont and continued to serve until his retirement in June of 2019. He was a longtime member of the Masons. He and Nanette served on the Troop 16 Advisory Board for many years. Gordon enjoyed traveling and made several trips to Okinawa, Japan, California, Alaska, and Virginia. He also liked attending the Iowa State Fair and Old Thrashers Reunion in Mount Pleasant, Iowa. Andrew's Funeral Home and Floral is apparently in charge of the arrangements. Douglas P. Badker, age 72, of Osage, died Tuesday, February 11th at Mitchell County Regional Health Center in Osage. Cremation has taken place. Services will be held at a later date. Champion Boucher Funeral Home in Osage is in charge of those arrangements. Jack Martin Henriksen, 76, passed away on Monday, February 10th at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. A memorial service will be held at 4:30 p.m. on Saturday, February 15th at Sheckler Colonial Chapel, 114 North Hawkeye Avenue in Nora Springs. Visitation will be Friday, February 14th from 5 to 7 p.m. at Sheckler Colonial Chapel. If friends desire, memorials may be directed towards the Nora Springs Ambulance or the Nora Springs Fire Department. Jack was born January 23, 1944, the son of Earl and Betty Ravenstad Henriksen. Jack grew up in the Nora Springs area and was a graduate of Nora Springs High School. Jack married Peggy Motland on May 23, 1964 in Nora Springs, and from this union, two sons were born. To support his family, Jack was a truck driver for Rock Falls Grain. When he wasn't working or spending time with loved ones, he enjoyed the outdoors. Fishing and hunting were two ways Jack could find peace in nature. Sheckler Colonial Chapel is in charge of these funeral arrangements. Ronald Craig Bruner, 69, of Sun City, Arizona, passed away on February 8th due to a stroke. Born on April 15, 1950, in Mason City to George and Evelyn Bruner. He married Lucille Haas on November 15, 1969, at St. Joseph's Church in Mason City, and they celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary last year. Ron worked in the grocery business in his early years and spent many, many years in the beverage business in Mason City. Ron retired to Sun City, Arizona in June of 2017. Ron enjoyed the warm weather and spending time with his grandchildren. Ron will be greatly missed and will have a special place in our hearts. There will be no memorial service, as Ron has donated his body to science. A celebration of his life for the family will be held at a later date. William W. Bill Elliott, 77, of Mason City, passed away on Tuesday, February 11th at Mercy One, North Iowa, in Mason City, surrounded by his children. A funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. on Monday, February 17th at First Baptist Church, 125 East State Street in Mason City, with Reverend Jim Bringman officiating. Burial will follow in Elmwood St. Joseph Cemetery in Mason City. Visitation with public viewing will be held Sunday afternoon, February 16th, from 2 p.m. until 4 p.m. at Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel, 126 3rd Street Northeast, and will resume 1 hour prior to the service at the church on Monday. In lieu of customary remembrances, memorials may be left in Bill's name to the Lime Creek Nature Center or the Humane Society of North Iowa. Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel is in charge of the arrangements. Robert John Schreckengost, 72, of Sheffield, passed away Wednesday, February 12th at his home in Sheffield. A memorial service will be held at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, February 15th at the First United Methodist Church in Sheffield. A visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, February 14th at First United Methodist Church in Sheffield. Burial will take place in the Hillsdale Cemetery in Sheffield. The Seitzma Vogel Funeral Home of Hampton is assisting Robert's family in this service. Now we will turn to the previous section and what's happening in North Iowa in the coming days. Finding Neverland, featuring Iowan, comes to Mason City. Sioux City area native Nathan Groth, who attended the American Musical and Dramatic Academy in New York City, is making his national tour debut in Finding Neverland, a Broadway musical about one of the world's most beloved stories. Groth will perform in Finding Neverland at 7:30 p.m. on Saturday at the North Iowa Community Auditorium, 500 College Drive in Mason City. The show is part of the North Iowa Area Community College's Performing Arts and Leadership Series. Finding Neverland, based on the Academy Award-winning film of the same name, follows the relationship between playwright J.M. Barrie and the family that inspired Peter Pan. For more information about the show, visit FindingNeverlandTheMusical.com. To purchase tickets to Finding Neverland, call the NIAC box office at 888-466-4222, extension 4188. They also may be purchased online at niac.edu/boxoffice. Kids' creations to be featured at the Charles H. McNider Art Museum. The Charles H. McNider Art Museum sponsors an exhibition of student artwork each year with the annual School Art Exhibition to celebrate Youth Art Month in March. This year's show features the artwork of elementary school students. The exhibit opens at 9 a.m. on February 14th. At 10 a.m. on March 28th, McNider will celebrate the students' accomplishments and recognize their teachers. Award certificates will be handed out at 10:30 a.m. Color the Wind Kite Festival returns to Clear Lake. The Color the Wind Kite Festival, in its 19th year, will take place from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday on Clear Lake near the seawall. This year's event is expected to draw kite flyers from 8 states, including Iowa, Minnesota, North Dakota, Wisconsin, Missouri, Nebraska, Kansas, and Illinois. Returning this year are two stunt kite teams, 180 Go and Fire and Ice, that will perform dance routines choreographed to music with four-line and two-line kites, respectively, throughout the festival. Kites will be available for purchase at the Route 66 Kite Shop in the Lakeview Room, 10 North Lakeview Drive, across the street from the Flying Field. There will also be food available from the Smoky Heights food truck and inside the Lakeview Room. The event is free and open to the public, but there will be donation buckets located throughout the event to help offset some of the expenses. For more information about the Color the Wind Kite Festival, visit colorthewind.org. Learn about growing hops, the stuff that makes beer. Learn about the Iowa hops industry and growing the crop at an event sponsored by Iowa State University and Extension Outreach, Mitchell County. Limestone Brewers in Osage is hosting Carrie Byram, owner of Cedar Falls Hops. She will talk about hop anatomy, how they are grown, and care, maintenance, and harvesting of hops. The event will be held from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. on February 19th at the brewery. Pre-registration is not required, but is preferred. Register on the event Facebook page, facebook.com/events/258-525-438-159-1850. Limestone Brewers is located at 518 Main Street in Osage. The Florida Project Free Film at McNider this weekend. The Charles H. McNider Art Museum's 2020 Winter Film Series, Films in February, continues at 2 p.m. Saturday with The Florida Project. The Florida Project tells the story of a six-year-old and her group of friends whose summer break is filled with childhood wonder, possibility, and a sense of adventure, while the adults around them struggle with hard times. The film is rated R for language throughout, disturbing behavior, sexual references, and some drug material, and is 115 minutes long. Admission to all films is free and open to the public. Popcorn will be provided. After the film, the museum will host a discussion group for anyone who would like to attend. For more information about the film series or for a complete list of films with descriptions, please visit McNiderArt.org or call 641-421-3666. The Charles H. McNider Art Museum is located at 303 2nd Street Southeast in Mason City. NIAC Marketplace offers wide collection of works. NIAC, with the assistance of the Papa John's Center, is hosting its marketplace from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on February 19th at NIAC's Activity Center. Marketplace is a seasonal showcase for NIAC students, staff, faculty, and alumni who like to create and share their works. The NIAC Marketplace will play host to artists, inventors, photographers, bakers, calligraphers, and crafters. So bring lots of money to spend. Valentine's Day Cabaret at Brick Street Theater. Still looking for a special event for you and your loved one on Valentine's Day? Join Brick Street Theater at 6:30 p.m. on Friday for a night of romance and elegance in the Bowman Fine Arts Center at the Valentine's Day Cabaret. Be serenaded with the sounds of love by veteran Brick Street Theater members as you dine on your choice of swordfish, bison tenderloin medallions, or duck leg confit. Reservations are required. Tickets are $45 per person and can be found on the theater's website, brickstreettheater.org/home, or by calling 641-585-1800. The Bowman Fine Arts Center is located at 225 John K. Hansen Drive in Forest City. Snow much fun at the Mason City Public Library. Read books, get a free froyo. Looking for some ongoing winter fun for the whole family? Stop by the Mason City Public Library Children's Desk to pick up your winter reading game cards. Fill out half your card to win a coupon for a cup of Froyo at Orange Leaf in Mason City. Turn in your completed game card by February 29th to win a book. Game cards are available for kids birth to fifth grade, and there is no registration necessary. Call the Mason City Police MCPL Youth Services Department at 641-321-3671 for more information. And that's what's happening in North Iowa. Okay, here's a couple of human interest stories. Iowa deer harvest numbers down from last year. Officials with the State Department of Natural Resources say Iowa hunters reported harvesting nearly 94,000 deer during Iowa's 2019-2020 hunting seasons, a decline from the previous year when hunters reported taking nearly 108,000 deer. Wildlife experts say a number of factors likely contributed to the decline, but DNR officials said Tuesday the most prominent was the outbreak of hemorrhagic disease, Iowa's second largest, that killed thousands of deer across the state. The Iowa DNR manages the deer herd to support a harvest of 100,000 to 120,000 deer based on recommendations from the legislative mandated Deer Advisory Committee. Our deer population has rebounded after hemorrhagic outbreaks in the past, and we expect the same will be true after this outbreak, said Tyler Harms, a DNR wildlife biologist. From our perspective, we manage the population for the long term, and impacts from this year, while significant, are likely a short blip on the horizon. And this was interesting. We think it's cold here. I guess the Iraqis think it is too. Iraq's capital of Baghdad awoke on Tuesday to a sight not seen in over a decade, their city covered in snow. It was a rare moment of respite during which residents took selfies and children played in parks, lobbying snowballs before the fluffy flakes disappeared and the white cover dissolved into gray puddles. Iraq has grappled with months of unrest, beginning with an anti-government protest movement which engulfed the country in October and the United States killing of a top Iranian general in Baghdad in early January, which brought the region close to war amid soaring U.S.-Iran tensions. Over 500 people have died in the protests as security forces used live rounds and tear gas to disperse crowds in Baghdad in southern Iraq. The movement is entering a critical phase after influential Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr, who initially threw his weight behind demonstrators, withdrew it. Tensions have since seethed between protesters and al-Sadr's followers. In the city's central Tahrir Square, the epicenter of the protest movement, protesters took a moment to observe the snowfall and dusted the flakes off their Syrian tents. "Thank God it is snowing this morning," said Ayman Ahmed, a protester. "The atmosphere is beautiful. The people are very happy because this is the first time snow falls in Iraq." Annual snowfalls is common in the mountainous northern region of Iraq, but very rare in Baghdad. The last time the capital saw snow was in 2008. And that brings us to the end of our reading of the Globe Gazette for Thursday, February 13th. Your reader has been Debbie Cedars. This broadcast has come to you through a partnership between the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service and 97.9 FM KCMR Radio. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of IRIS or KCMR. Thank you for listening and stay tuned for today's reading of the Des Moines Register. You're listening to IRIS, your 24-hour radio reading service. Have a great day.